In fact, that over the last several of years, there have been a number of fatalities on the campus involving pedestrians and buses. There have been some with vehicles other than buses, and then there have been injury accidents involving cars and trucks and vans. This issue has a particular kind of currency and urgency now, however, because there was a student who was killed by a bus on the campus this past September. And that has gotten officials from the university and also from the cities of Urbana and Champaign talking in a more kind of urgent way about what can be done to make the campus more safe, particularly for pedestrians, but also for everyone, because we do have times on the campus when there are large number of people on the street all at once. We have pedestrians, we have people on bicycles and on rollerblades, and we have people in cars, and we have buses, and we have trucks. And it's sometimes it's pretty difficult to get around. We'll talk a little bit about what officials in the two towns here and on the campus are thinking about in this part of the show, and invite people who have also comments who are listening to us. Let me just introduce very quickly our guests. William Gray is here. He's Director of Public Works for the City of Urbana. Bruce Knight, he's the Planning Director for the City of Champaign. And Pam Wojtyk, she's Director of Campus Services for the University of Illinois and is responsible for quite a few things on the campus, but among other things, campus parking is under her jurisdiction. So we're pleased that all three of them can be here. We're telling people who are listening, if you want to call in, we're certainly interested in comments and questions that you might have here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. If it would happen to be a long-distance call, use our toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much to the three of you for being here. As I said just before we got going, this is a very complicated issue. Here in our 50 minutes, we're not going to answer all possible questions, but at least we can start to have a kind of a conversation. Given the fact that we do have a complicated situation here, where we do have times when we have a lot of people in motion in different modes of transportation, bikes and walking and vehicles, if I ask you the question, is it possible to say, if you could do one thing that you could think would make the situation better, what would it be? Let me start with Bill Gray.
Boy, if there's one thing you could do, it'd be perhaps to physically separate the pedestrian crossings with the street or at-grade crossings. That would certainly separate those modes and reduce conflicts.
So if you could make it so that there was no way for pedestrians and vehicles to ever come in contact.
Right.
But obviously, no, that's not possible.
Correct.
Short of that, if I said, okay, I'm going to force you to pick something that you could actually do, what would it be?
Well, I think it's a variety of things. It's a host of matters we've done really for the last several years, and which gets into the campus area transportation studies we've been doing for some time. Mm-hmm. And I think it boils down to basically, you know, three parts to the equation, and the part we've been working on quite a bit is physical improvements throughout the campus or university district as we define it. And the other two aspects are the enforcement and education component to the drivers and to the pedestrians and buses and transit folks and such. So in a nutshell, those are the three legs to the stool, if you will, that we're trying to incorporate and been working towards for some time.
Okay. Well, let me ask Bruce Knight the same sort of question.
I would agree with Bill. I think the fact is that for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been working on the campus area transportation study with our first priority being trying to enhance pedestrian safety. Only a small percentage of the recommendations that are contained in that study have actually been implemented at this point in time for a variety of reasons, logistical reasons, probably monetary reasons as much as anything else, because a lot of them are relatively expensive to implement. But they have to do with things like having the countdown signals throughout the university district, shortening the crossing distances for pedestrians so their period of exposure to a vehicle is a lot less, and also those pinch points tend to have the effect of calming the speeds of vehicles as well. Drivers aren't as comfortable driving at as high a speed, so they slow down more. So the one thing, and it turns out to be a series of things, as Bill just described, that I would say is implement the rest of the recommendations that are contained in the campus area transportation study so that we've done as much as we can in terms of altering the physical environment. And then we do need to enforce, and those efforts have picked up in recent weeks. And we need to educate. This is an environment where we have more vehicles, more pedestrians, more bicyclists than you're probably going to find anywhere else in a town this size in the Midwest. It's a very, very intense area when it comes to transportation-related issues. And that means that everybody has to be aware of who's around them and how they're impacted by those other forms of transportation.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Pam Wojtyk, and maybe I'll frame the question a little bit differently. It seems that we have a quite a bit of emphasis placed on pedestrian behavior. And the strong message we're giving to pedestrians is we really think it's a good idea for you to cross at the crossings. And if the sign says don't walk, don't. And that, in fact, there is this principle that says that you're really responsible for not putting yourself in harm's way. And if you step out in front of a car, you shouldn't take for granted the fact that that person, it's their responsibility to slam on their brakes if they step out in front of you. Now, I think all of this rankles with pedestrians who sort of say, now, wait a minute. This is not my problem. This is a driver problem. Why don't be giving me a ticket because I'm jaywalking. You should be going out there and getting people who are driving recklessly or not paying attention to what they're doing in their cars or, you know, on and on. Obviously, it's not just about pedestrians. But how do you feel about there being a major focus here that has to do with educating people and particularly saying to pedestrians, you know, you've got to consider your own safety.
I'm in 100% agreement with the CATS recommendations and the big piece about educating our pedestrians. And that's more than just students. That's faculty, staff, and visitors. Right. I don't think any one of us can say that we haven't been thinking about a meeting or someplace we needed to be and didn't pay attention when we stepped out into the crosswalk. So I think that we do need to remind and to educate. And if I can go back to the question that you started with Bill Gray, if there was one thing that I would want to do, my response to that would be for the university is to slow things down. Slow things down from the standpoint of think about where you're going, think about what you're doing. We don't have any hesitancy to tell our students to be mindful of your surroundings when you're walking alone at night and that you really shouldn't be walking alone at night. This is no different from that. What we're saying is be mindful of your surroundings because you need to be aware that while drivers are supposed to stop if you're in the crosswalk, that doesn't guarantee that they are going to stop. So all of us need to be mindful. Motorists, pedestrians are not supposed to step out into a crosswalk and stop traffic, but that doesn't mean that the student or the staff member that's standing on the corner thinking about their next class, the next exam, the next meeting they have to go to might not notice that there's a car coming and step out. So all of us need to slow down and take a little time to be more mindful of our surroundings.
Well, this prompts one more question, and it's something that I particularly want to ask both William Gray and Bruce Knight. It's my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the university would like to have the speed limit in the campus area reduced. One of the things that's happened because there was concern about buses is that we said to the buses, we would like you to reduce your speed from 25 miles an hour to 20. But that what the university would like is for the speed limit for everybody to be reduced to 20. And that in the city of Champaign, the council said no. And in the city of Urbana, it may be up for discussion, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of sympathy for reducing the speed limits. And I'm wondering from both of you, why is that? What's the problem with just slowing down traffic and saying, okay, we'll make the speed limit for everybody 20 miles an hour?
Well, there's a basic philosophy when it comes to setting speed limits that people will generally drive the speed that they're comfortable, and that you can set a speed limit, but it doesn't necessarily really slow the speeds. And unless you're going to spend a lot of money on enforcement and really actively be out there on a regular basis, it's difficult to slow the speed. Virtually for any of the pedestrian fatalities that have occurred in recent years, speed hasn't really been a factor. The CATS technical committee recommended the reduced speed for the whole university district based on the philosophy that it caught people's attention more than that slowing the speed was really the net result that we were trying to get after. It made people aware that they were in an area that was different than anywhere else in town. It made them think about the fact that, that they should behave differently. Our city council felt that it wasn't an effective solution to trying to enhance pedestrian safety, that it was more of a, you know, of a knee-jerk reaction. And, you know, at this point in time, weren't willing to support it. You know, whether that would change in the future, I don't know. But I think that, at least from my perspective, and I think that generally others on the CATS technical committee would agree with this, while it might be nice to send that message consistently throughout the university district, to have a mishmash of different speed limits throughout the area may not be the best solution either, because then you have people constantly having to look and be aware of, you know, am I on a 25-mile-an-hour street or a 20-mile-an-hour street? So after that failed, Bill and I talked, and Pam as well, and I think that, you know, while it might have been nice, trying to remain consistent may be more important.
Okay. Well, I assume that, Bill, you pretty much agree with what Bruce said.
Exactly. We felt that from Urbana's perspective, we needed to have a consistency throughout the university district. So at this time, we've not pursued the matter, knowing Champaign's decision at this time.
Right. And Pam, are you pretty much okay with that decision? Or do you still somehow in your heart of hearts think, well, maybe it would help if the speed limit in the university district and sort of in the heart of the campus was 20 miles an hour?
I think it would, and I think the members of the CATS committee think it would too. We also know that it will take some convincing. Bruce is correct, though. In the roadways that we have in the campus area, there are some changes that we want to make to slow things down, to do some traffic calming. And I think as we move further down the road and making those kinds of changes, it will be much easier to convince people that we've created a roadway environment that is conducive to a much slower speed and that that should help us make that change in the future. I don't think it's a recommendation that we're going to remove. We're going to continue to move towards getting it approved. It's just going to take us some time.
All right. Well, I have some callers here I want to bring into the conversation. Other people who are listening are certainly welcome if you have questions or comments. Let me also introduce the guests. Pam Wojtyk is Director of Campus Services for the University of Illinois. Bruce Knight is Planning Director for the City of Champaign. William Gray is Director of Public Works for the City of Urbana. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have someone in Champaign here to start us, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. My name is Francis Boyle. I'm a professor of law at the University of Illinois College of Law in Champaign. A year ago, when the graduate student was run over by a bus while the graduate student was crossing in a crosswalk with the right-of-way, I called up Mr. Tom Costello, director at the MTD. They gave me his voice message. I left the message. I identified myself with my phone number, and I said clearly this graduate student had the right of way and was run over by a reckless bus driver. I myself, on my lunch break going out over the years, have several times, numerous times, almost been run over by reckless bus drivers. And it seemed to me that every MTD bus driver needed to be retrained immediately. Mr. Costello did not bother to return my telephone call, and as far as I can tell, no effort was made to retrain any of these MTD bus drivers. For that reason, I hold Mr. Costello and the MTD responsible for the death of Sarah Chanik that took place right down here from my office. What, again, we had here was a student crossing in a crosswalk with the right of way and run over by an inexperienced, untrained bus driver. Under the Illinois Criminal Code, this constitutes reckless homicide by a motor vehicle and is a felony. Both bus drivers should have been prosecuted. But apparently the coroner decided to rule it was an accident, both cases an accident, which it clearly was not, so as not to create a slam-dunk liability case against the MTD. Now, this is going to go on. students being recklessly run over and killed or maimed or injured by MTD bus drivers until some basic changes are made at the MTD. First, the entire leadership team at MTD must be fired, including Mr. Costello. We need to bring in a new leadership team at MTD that is going to guarantee that its bus drivers are properly trained and supervised. Third, we need to set up a mechanism for monitoring these buses here on campus, a phone number on the bus, am I driving recklessly, with a number to call, as we see on the highway with many of these trucks, and a dispatcher there who would send out monitors immediately to investigate any reckless behavior by any MTD bus driver here on campus. That bus driver would be suspended. Disciplinary proceedings, of course, with full due process of law, would be opened against the bus driver, and if found guilty, that bus driver would be fired. Fourth, we need citizen participation, active citizen participation, in the monitoring and supervision of the MTD. Two innocent dead students are enough to prove that we, the citizens of Champaign and Urbana and the University of Illinois, cannot trust the MTD again. And I went over and I personally witnessed the little memorial that the students had erected to Sarah Chanik. There was no excuse for her death. If Mr. Costello and the MTD had done what I had told them to do, it never would have happened. So I'm asking you, the officials of Champaign and Urbana and the University of Illinois, to go after the MTD. Fire Costello. Fire this MTD leadership team. Institute a new system for training MTD bus drivers. Institute a system for monitoring them and disciplining them. And finally, institute a system for citizen involvement, direct citizen involvement in the monitoring, investigation, and disciplining of the MTD. Thank you.
All right. Well, we don't have somebody here from the MTD to respond, and perhaps on some future show we should have Mr. Volk, somebody from the MTD, here to talk. And I do want to give you the chance to respond to what the caller had to say, however, particularly because it seems that in some people's minds, the buses seem to constitute a significant problem and a greater problem than other kinds of vehicles in the campus. Now, it is true that, yes, we have had two people here killed by buses, but also in the past few years, we've had people killed by cars as well. Do you think that buses somehow are a greater problem than other vehicles? And if that's the case, what do you do about that?
Well, buses certainly, by their size and the nature of a bus, present unique challenges as compared to an individual vehicle. On the other hand, I think any transportation professional alive will tell you that a intensely pedestrian-oriented area that you want to keep intensely pedestrian-oriented won't work without good mass transit service, that the only way that you can cope with trying to move all those people in and out of the area efficiently is with mass transit. I think that, you know, I can't speak to the legal issues or the facts of prior cases. I believe one of the individuals was in a crosswalk, one wasn't. That's sort of beside the point. As the Campus Area Transportation Study Technical Committee met in recent months at the request of the chancellor, we did put everything on the table and indicate that we wanted to look at ways to enhance safety where buses interact with pedestrians. Primarily, both fatalities have been at locations where buses turn. Mm-hmm. And so looking at those locations of turning movements and looking at the geometry of the intersections, the way we stop and control traffic, for example, at 6th and Chalmers, a bus driver has, until recently, had to be conscious of vehicles traveling southbound on 6th that may not be very visible because of the diagonal parking that was on the street. A very heavy flow of pedestrians throughout the intersection and trying to judge the time when to pull out and make a turn. We think that may have impacted the visibility. So there are changes that need to be made. The bus routes maybe need to be realigned. But in particular, I think the turning locations have to be studied and improved.
Pam Wojtyk, do you think some people think that there are too many buses in the campus area? And one of the complaints people frequently seem to make is that, well, I see all these buses driving around campus and there's nobody on them, or there's one person or there's two people. So could we somehow have fewer buses? And if we had fewer buses on the street at the same time, would that possibly reduce the possibility of accidents?
I think over the past few years, we've had an increase in the number of buses and with some of the changes that we've made. I agree that if you want a pedestrian environment, you are going to have mass transit available to move people in and out of the campus. We did a lot of work to remove vehicles, so now what we have left are the mass transit vehicles. And I think the question that needs to be asked is, do we have too many? And we're moving forward. We've had discussions, we meaning the Campus Area Transportation Study, have had discussions on frequencies and numbers of buses. The university is moving forward on an intermodal study to assess what the university's needs are for public transportation or mass transportation on the campus to help us better understand what the right number is for the buses, what the right number is for the vehicles. Do we want to have vehicles out of the center of campus altogether? Do we want to reduce the number of buses? Those are all questions that we're trying to answer.
Hmm. Bill Graham, you want to add anything to that?
The only thought I had was just that up until recently, really the MTD bus system had a very good safety record. It's unfortunate of these two fatalities. I think they are doing extraordinary measures to train and better educate and make some other improvements with MTD to prevent these situations. But, up until recently, they've had a very good safety record.
And I should also point out that MTD has been spending money on adding strobe lights, looking to add audible sounds at the locations when they turn, again, so that hopefully pedestrians will be more aware of the oncoming bus. But we may want to relocate some of those turning movements as well.
Hmm. If I could add,
we're asking questions of the MTD with respect to frequency of stops, number of buses, but I would hope that those same kinds of questions would be asked of the recommendations as they're implemented that the Campus Area Transportation Study has made, because it is part of our responsibility once we make changes to monitor how effective those changes are. We have changed the transit system on the campus. We've increased service. It is our responsibility to go back and make sure that it is meeting the need that we had originally set out to meet.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone else here in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Is this me?
Yes.
Hi. I've been in this area since I came here as a freshman in 1970. And I'd like to make a few observations. This town has always had drivers that are far more aggressive than they need to be. I think the difference now is back in the 70s, we fully expected to be hit. I mean, getting hit by a car was a real possibility. So whenever we got near the curbs, we kept our eyes open. Then in the 70s and 80s came first Walkman and then cell phones and then finally iPods. And one of your guests had mentioned earlier education. I think students need to be told to be perfectly crude. If you have your head up your rear end, you're probably going to get hit by something. And I think a lot of this is just people presuming that the streets are safe and stepping out into them. I don't know on the fatalities. I don't know what the bus was doing, how fast it was going, if the student suddenly, although in a crosswalk, suddenly appeared without having the bus time to stop or what. But and I don't want to blame victims either, but there's a serious problem. I believe about a year ago there was a student hit on First Street that was on a cell phone at the time. Another thing is, for me, since I've been away from campus for about 10 years, I think campus has become a lot more dangerous because back in the 70s, there were more streets than there are now. Many of them have been closed off, paved over, and otherwise restricted. And then with the latest bit of road engineering, some streets that had been one way for many, many years, specifically Wright, 6th, and John, I believe those in sections have their direction reversed, and I personally am likely to be looking the wrong way when I step out in one of those streets when I'm on campus. And one other thing that is should be addressed is non-motorized traffic. You have these crosswalks with the nice sign, the nice strobe lights, and the nice flashing, and the nice signs out in the middle of the roads. But what those do is they actually restrict lane width. So when I'm trying to bicycle from Urbana, where I live, over into Champaign, there are not a whole lot of options available, and one of them is to go down Pennsylvania. Well, outside the law building, there are these signs saying this is a crosswalk, you have to stop. I have no choice but to go out, take my bicycle out into the middle of the lane, because there is no way that a motor vehicle can pass me safely while I am in that section because of those signs. Anyway, those are my observations. Like to hear reactions or whatever. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if there's specifically anything you would like to respond to. The thing that I hear, and is something that I hear a lot from people who drive, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, is the distracted pedestrian. This concern that there are pedestrians that are wearing headphones and listening to music. There are people who are talking on the telephone, that they're simply not paying enough attention. And now there are also, we see drivers who are talking on the telephone, which may be a problem too. But I guess I find myself going back to this question. Well, is that really a problem? And then what do you do about it? That seems ultimately to be an education kind of a thing.
Well, I think distracted pedestrians, drivers, and everything else can be a problem, and is certainly something that needs to be part of any educational campaign, you know, trying to encourage people to be more aware of their surroundings. Some have said that some of the pedestrian safety measures that have already been put in place maybe have emboldened pedestrians to act less safely. Maybe that's true. I'm not sure, you know, creating a less safe environment so they're more careful is necessarily the right answer either. But I definitely think that again, you know, through education and enforcement, we need to try and promote certain kinds of behaviors and make the physical environment match that as well. A bicycle on the street in the state of Illinois is a vehicle and would have to obey all the traffic laws that any other vehicle would. Obviously, you know, speed is maybe not the issue for them, bicycles is one of the areas that didn't get studied as much in depth in the first round of studies for CATS, and it's something that we've recommended in the relook. We go back and spend a little more time addressing the issue of how to manage bicycle traffic in the university district more safely and efficiently.
I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because somebody I bumped into somebody this morning who knew that we were going to do this program, who said, I really want to hear some talk about bicycles, because they felt that hadn't really been addressed. And there, I know, again, that's bicyclists like to complain about drivers, and drivers like to complain about bicyclists. And that it seems that we have to find some way to see if we could have both of those forms of transportation coexist, which seems to be tough. Personally, I have a gripe as a pedestrian about sharing my sidewalk with people on a bicycle. But I also have sympathy for the cyclists who say, it's kind of dangerous to ride my bicycle in the street because it's really not set up for me to share that with the cars either. I'll turn to the man from Urbana. What sort of things, for example, are you thinking about in Urbana that have to do with creating spaces for cyclists?
Well, this has been a hot topic and actually a council goal that we're talking about now. And we, too, would like to do probably a bike master plan. This is something that we're talking about very seriously. And if, in fact, we do one within the university district through an extension of that contract or a separate one, we would like to explore that further. But throughout Urbana, we've been really focusing a lot on bike paths or off-road type systems, and we've been pretty successful in implementing those in and around, especially the newer areas of the community and new road expansions and such. But within the older part or the West Urbana area, there haven't been necessarily off bike path projects per se. We've just completed one outside the front door here at WIOL on North Goodwin Avenue, for example, and South Lincoln Avenue, Windsor Road, and that sort of thing. But on the east-west streets, we'd like to study that further and see if we can do the off bike or a bike lane situation. So that needs further review, further study from our perspective, mm-hmm. and integrate then those paths and lanes, you know, with the university bike system.
Now, there is on the university campus a system for bicycles, bike paths, and I don't know how well people in the university feel that that works.
I think the system itself needs some improvement and better connection to the systems that exist in the two cities. And I think that moving forward in the next phase of the campus area transportation study, that has to be a big piece that we address. Because right now the system that we have, and I hate to say this, but it's true, you'll find yourself on a bike path and then it ends, and you don't know where it picks up again. We need to do a better job of that, and especially in the core area of the campus where we've identified there to be a strong pedestrian emphasis, then we also need to include the bicycles to get them there and the mass transit to get them in and out. That piece itself hasn't been addressed, and I think that there's a lot that we could do to further separate the bicycles from the vehicles, the bicycles from the pedestrians, and give them a much better system for getting from one side of the university district to the other, because it isn't there now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. Let's go to the campus, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have two quick comments. You brought up the bicycle issue, which was my main comment. I think that it's not so much a problem of speed. It's a problem that the bicyclists break the law with impunity. They go down one-way streets the wrong way. They make turns where there are clearly marked no-turn signals. And I think studying these things is all very well. But I think the simple solution, I think, is if the word gets, and by the way, we're talking about dozens of bicycles every day that I see doing that. I think the solution to this problem, at least temporarily, is if the word got out that bicyclists were going to get ticketed $30 to $50 every time they're caught doing that, I think that would be a very simple and quick solution to this problem. The other comment is, I think a large part of the problem has to do with the new, and somebody else mentioned this, has to do with the new, very expensive, apparently, traffic patterns that were instituted, which I think are designed to confuse motorists. Two quick examples. I park at the corner of, in that huge parking structure at the corner of 6th and John Street. It used to take me 4 blocks to get from there to Goodwin Avenue and out of the university district. It now takes me 8. That means I'm there for twice as long and twice as likely to have an accident. Another example is, I can't imagine that it's a good idea on John Street to have 2 one-way streets facing each other. John is west, and on the other side of the street, John goes east. That seems to me is designed for accidents. Motorists have too much to think about on campus to drive safely, and as I say, especially the bicycle problem. You don't expect to find a bicycle coming at you when you're on a one-way street. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, that maybe I could pick the bicycle enforcement question, and maybe this is a question for, particularly if we're talking about the campus, for the university and for the university police. Has there been some conversation about being a little bit more aggressive in terms of expecting people on cycles to obey the rules of the road, which, as Bruce Knight pointed out, they are obligated to do? Stop at traffic lights, stop signs, signal, go the right way on streets where the traffic is supposed to go a certain way?
Yes, there has been discussion, not specifically targeted at bicyclists, but targeted at educating and enforcing the university district population overall, whether you're a motorist, a pedestrian, or a bicyclist. And I'm not sure. I would have to go to the UI Police Department to see the number of citations that were issued. I know that several warning citations were issued just to start making people more aware. I have to go back and reemphasize what Bill Gray had said. Any approach that we take has to have those three pieces. You have to have the physical changes, you have to follow with an education program, and you have to follow up with some sort of enforcement that lets people know that, yeah, you do have to adhere to the rules and the guidelines that we've set for this area.
Yeah.
I'd like to make a comment on the circulation pattern that's been mentioned a couple of times. As we worked on the campus area transportation studies, one of the realities that we faced is that this is an incredibly challenging area because of the intense activity, and we sort of had a philosophy that everybody had to give a little bit to gain a little bit. The gentleman mentioned that he thought it was designed to confuse drivers. Well, he's not entirely wrong. To a certain extent, the idea was if you were coming to a destination, particularly on Wright Street, you needed to know where you were going and have it be your destination rather than just an area that you circulate through on a regular basis. The circulation changes in that area reduced the vehicular traffic on Wright Street by more than 80%. That was one of our goals. We wanted to have fewer vehicles on Wright Street because it is the place where there is the highest percentage of pedestrians, and the circulation patterns are designed to enforce that. As much as possible, they're designed to move traffic away from campus and away from Wright Street as efficiently and quickly as possible. The challenge with the intersection of 6th and John is if we allow right turns and had John continue one way westbound, we would have to significantly increase the radius on the northwest corner of 6th and John, reducing a lot of pedestrian space, lengthening the crossing distance for pedestrians. So there was a conscious choice not to do that at that location and instead encourage people to use Daniel as the way that they move across to, say, 4th Street or 1st Street and out of the area.
Anything anybody else wants to add?
No, I mean, it was a tough decision, and again, the pedestrian took precedence. That's what the emphasis was on when that decision was made.
I guess I am sympathetic with people, particularly people who don't come to the campus very often. It can be very confusing. And if you haven't been around for a while, it is possible that in the interim, something has changed. So I'm not really quite sure what you do about that. It can be very difficult to drive a car on the campus. And perhaps, as you say, that's maybe part of the idea is that you're actually trying to reduce the number of cars that are driving through the campus. And as Pam just said, you're doing it because your main concern is pedestrian safety.
One of the interesting things we looked at when we were doing the second phase of CATS was how many people drove into the university district on one end of Green Street and came out at the other end, because we wanted to see how many people were using that as a through route versus a destination route. It was a fairly small percentage. Most of the people are driving along Green Street to get to some destination on campus. And so one of the things we want to encourage is people to use Kirby, Florida and Springfield Avenue or University Avenue to go east-west and then use the north-south streets as close to the location that they're going to as possible to come down into the area, because it is the east-west routes that are most challenging.
We have about 15 minutes left. Maybe for anyone who has just tuned in, I should introduce again our guests. Bruce Knight, he's planning director for the City of Champaign. Pam Vojtic, director of campus services, University of Illinois. William Gray, director of public works for the City of Urbana. We're talking about safety issues around the campus area. We will try to get some more callers in, and I'm sure this is something we'll continue to follow. It's not – when we get to the end, we won't have said everything there is to say, and I know that folks on the campus and the two cities are – this is a continuing process. They are continuing to look at what the issues are and how to deal with them. Let's talk next, I think, with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I liked your first question, you know, when you directed at the guest. I'm not too sure about the answers. When one of your guests said that separating pedestrian from vehicle traffic was his ideal, but he dismissed it as being impossible. And I can't help but to wonder why, you know, we just tore up Green Street all the way down east and west, why we couldn't have gone underground, you know, or possibly overground with pedestrian route doing an X across, say, Green and Wright. And that's all I'm wondering. Thanks.
Okay. I think I was the one who dismissed it and said it was impossible, and you did sort of nod and say, yeah, I think that's true. Is that, in fact, something that could have been done, and you would just have to say, well, it's just a matter of money. It would have cost money to do it. Or is it, in fact, something that you really can't, as a practical matter, you really can't do? You cannot completely separate your vehicles and your pedestrians.
Well, first of all, there are so many locations, so many crossings, so many north, south, east, west streets to look at that, you know, sort of a total subterranean solution here, which would be, you know, cost prohibitive. That'd be, you know, very difficult, obviously. But, kind of a study, parking-related study years ago on campus in the Green Street area was looked at and wasn't explored to a lot of detail. But if you had an at-grade ped crossing and somehow were able to lower, let's say, the Green Street traffic in that Wright, Matthews, you know, Goodwin area, you know, that would certainly help, you know, solve situations. There was one fatality there back in 95, for example, and it's a very heavy pedestrian crossing area, but it is money. It boils down to, you know, where is that fine line between, you know, saving lives and spending millions of dollars? And, you know, I think we all agree you want to save lives at almost any expense, but you know, how far do you go with that? And that's the tough thing.
There's also the fact that Green Street was once essentially the alignment of the Boneyard Creek, and while we've done a lot of things to improve flooding in the campus town area, we are a community that was built on the prairie and has a very, very high water table, mm-hmm. and going subterranean raises all kinds of other issues as well.
Yeah. We did look at lowering Green Street between Wright and Matthews and possibly putting parking with it, or separately just lowering the street and creating a pedestrian plaza across Green Street. And that's a possibility. It's feasible. It can be done. There's a high price tag that goes with it, but it only addresses one crossing area. It doesn't address Springfield. It doesn't address John Street. It doesn't address 6th Street. It doesn't address Matthews or Lincoln Avenue. So I think it's true. It would be impossible to separate pedestrians and vehicles completely within the campus. You could do it in some areas.
We should also point out that every study that's looked at trying to take pedestrians up and over streets in an area where the grade does not naturally promote that, pedestrians aren't going to go out of their way to go up a series of steps or a long ramp to go over Green Street and back down. They're just going to go ahead and cross, and mm-hmm. it will be a continuing problem even after a significant investment.
But part of the recommendations from CATS that we have not yet implemented deal with better channelizing pedestrian crossings on Green Street so that you don't have people crossing just anywhere along the street, but that we make it easier for them to get to the appropriate areas to cross.
Okay. We have some other folks here. Let's see. I think I have somebody who's been waiting for a while here in Mattoon. Let's go there on line two. Hello.
Hello. Extending what a previous caller had brought up, and not to try to assign blame to anyone, but rather to try to understand why this happened after so many years of no accidents by the MTD, could you tell me how many of these recent accidents involve cell phone usage?
I'm not sure. I think all of them, although I'm not positive that at least a couple of them did. The two fatalities and one other accident, at least two of those involve cell phone usage, but I don't know whether all of them did or not.
Right. I really do think that is a major problem for both drivers and pedestrians. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. One thing, if the calls will indulge me for a couple of minutes, one thing I really wanted to give William Gray a chance to talk about a little bit, and it's probably too complicated to talk about just a little bit, but is this, that the city of Urbana is proposing to make some very significant changes to a stretch of Lincoln Highway in an effort, again, to get some of these things. Can you talk a little bit about why it is that you have identified that particular area as one where there is a problem, and then real quick talk about what it is you are proposing to do?
Certainly. Lincoln Avenue, in the stretch between Pennsylvania Avenue and Nevada Street, there is very heavy pedestrian crossing, east-west crossing, and bicycle crossing for that matter. And in keeping with some of the principles that we've talked about today in trying to make it a safer crossing, we're seriously looking at a three-lane striping or configuration of Lincoln Avenue in this area. This would go hand-in-hand with signalizing, adding traffic signals at Nevada and Lincoln and traffic signals at Pennsylvania and Lincoln. And we'd be looking at establishing three lanes, one lane southbound, one lane northbound, and a two-way left turn lane in the center. It'd be a similar arrangement as Green Street is just west of 4th Street, for example. There would be a four-foot-wide or so shoulder also. And we believe that we would establish certain pedestrian crosswalk areas. We are looking at possibly even including a raised median for that added protection in the center lane for crossing one lane at a time. We would be taking that pavement width, which is currently 40 feet between the faces of curbs, and narrowing that down to about 32 feet. And when you, again, look at the center lane as kind of a protected area, especially if there is a raised median, for the pedestrian or bicyclist, it's a much easier crossing pattern. Now, the flip side is that, well, what about all the thousands of cars of traffic, 16, 17,000 cars a day? And currently we have the four-way stop arrangement in Nevada and at Pennsylvania. And we have shown through our studies and computer simulations that we would actually be reducing the delays that currently are there based on the four-way stops when you add traffic signals. So although we do have some pretty good backups currently, especially during our rush hour periods of time, those delays would be reduced with the signalization. So we're seriously looking at this implementation. We'll be discussing one more time with our city council early next year. We do have street resurfacing, patching work also planned to go on this coming summer. And I guess the fallback is that after a year or so analysis that it isn't a successful implementation, we can go back to the four-lane striping. But we believe with the study we've done so far that I think it will be safer for peds and bicyclists to cross and also move traffic through. And Lincoln Avenue is an arterial. It's an important roadway for Urbana, north-south roadway. So we don't want to diminish that. We want to penalize the volume of traffic and the delays. We know we're going to reduce the delays and still keep that volume going through the north-south corridor there.
Okay. And this is something that you're still inviting public comment on the changes?
Absolutely. We had a public information meeting a few weeks ago. Had a very good response by public input there. We've had one council study session on it. We plan to have one more. There is a council resolution for consideration coming up this coming Monday night, December 5th, and which is giving specific direction for staff to refine this study. But if all goes well, we plan to do the signals. We plan to do resurfacing work. Whether it's three-lane, four-lane, it will be happening this summer. So that is targeted. That's money budgeted. So we're trying to finalize this last piece.
Okay. Let's see if I can try to get at least one more caller here. Let's talk with someone in, I believe the next would be Charleston, line four. Hello.
Yes, a couple of comments. I live here in Charleston, where Eastern Illinois University is located, about a quarter the size of Champaign-Urbana campus. And my observation lately of the aggressive student crossing 4th Street, Lincoln Street, and 9th Street, which is right on campus, my experience about 2 weeks ago, and I worked out there for a long time, and it's just more aggressive for the pedestrian. Charging mid-block out of a darkened parking lot with low lighting, students heading for what's called Buzzard Hall. No inclination. They stare you down when you can see him coming, and across Lincoln Street, which is a four-lane road in the middle of the block, and almost no enforcement of any of this stuff, even by the campus police. If we were the size of Champaign-Urbana, the death list would be very long, because it is not, the regulation is not there by the police. I mean, the driver, and I agree with another caller, that the driver is becoming more and more agitated, and I wouldn't want to hurt anyone, but when you charge at mid-block, last time I looked up, the intersection that the pedestrian is obligated to go to the intersection and cross when their turn comes, but not at Eastern, and I'm sure the same thing happens there on campus at the U of I. And thank you, David. I'll ring off.
Well, thanks for the call. Well, I guess that nothing else that says that the University of Illinois is not the only place that has a problem like this. I would guess that any place that you have the same issue, you have large numbers of people, you have a lot of pedestrians, you have these different competing forms, or maybe one should say complementary forms of transportation, you're going to have those same kind of problems.
Yeah, I think it's very similar in college towns across the United States, and we may be unique in terms of both the intensity of activity as well as the multi-jurisdictional nature. I think one of our challenges, and one of the reasons why I think the CATS recommendations have more chance of succeeding than anything that's been discussed in the past is we have all the players at the table for the very first time trying to come up with a unified plan for how we address transportation issues. That includes Champaign, Urbana, the university, the Mass Transit District, as well as IDOT, because Springfield Avenue is a state highway running through the area.
Well, we're going to have to stop there with the promise that we'll try to pay attention to the continue to pay attention to these issues, maybe make some other opportunities. We can have the same kind of conversation, give people a chance to get stuff off their chest. And for now, though, I want to say thanks very much to William Gray, Director of Public Works for the City of Urbana, Bruce Knight, Planning Director for the City of Champaign, and Pam Wojtek, Director of Campus Services for the University of Illinois. Thank you all very much for being here.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Programming here on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. That's it for us here on Focus 580. Hope that you will stick around here, because coming up next, you'll have the opportunity to hear some more news, get some weather, some sports, get another interview. It's all part of the Afternoon Magazine. And the host of the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, writer Suketu Mehta will be our guest. He is the author of Maximum City, Bombay, Lost and Found. We will talk with him at 1:06 Central Time this afternoon. Let's take a look now at prices on the Board of Trade and on the Merck. December wheat at 3.5, that up 3. March, 3.16¾, up 3.5. December corn trading at 186¼, down 1.5. March, 2¾, down 1. May, 209¼, down 1. December, 238, down 1. January soybeans trading at 5.53, make that 5.53¼, down 5. March, 5.60¼, down 5¼. May, 5.66, down 5. November, 5.81, down 4.5. December meal, 169.20, down 2.50. December oil, 21.02, down 22. January feeder cattle, 116.85, down 10. December live cattle, 92.67½, that down 7.5. December lean hog, 62.45, down 55. February bellies, 87.65, down 70. January crude, 56.95, that down 41. The CRB index, 312.11, down 61. The U.S. dollar, 91.72, up 52. The Dow up 33 at 10,923. The S&P 500 4 higher at 1261. This is